There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Good morning, video games. Welcome once again to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thanks for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always...
Hour 13 has flashed up on the screen. We've been locked in here for that long.
Why is hour 13? Who is this, 12 Angry Men?
Yeah, what three angry men.
Fuck you, I'm not angry.
Three kind boys.
Deliberating over the innocence or guilt of the past decade of video games.
Guilty.
Guilty of being Adam Knox.
These jurors, yeah, you're Ben Vanel, you're a juror.
Yeah, I'm juror number three.
I'm Adam Knox. I'm the one who really thinks he did it.
if you're just joining us, this is the second part of our wrap-up of the games of the deck, games and events of the decade.
Yes.
If you, for whatever reason, happen to miss part one last week,
I strongly suggest you go back and listen to it.
Head on back.
Yeah.
This one, though, it yeah.
Nothing but callbacks in this one.
Remember Breath of the Wild? That's a callback to episodes 110 through 135 of our podcast.
But we just get straight into it. Ben killed a fly in his apartment.
Yep.
And watching that thing slowly die on the floor is... really re-energized the three of us. I feel fired up after watching that.
I sucked the life force out of it.
Yeah. It's really made me just aware of how quickly it can all be taken away from you, you know?
Is that what flies are doing with shit? Sucking the life force out of the shit?
Yes.
Like they're little shit vampires.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Shit vampires, the ones from Twilight, man.
Oh.
Got the 2010. No, that was the 2000s, I guess.
Yeah. Count Duckula.
Nice.
Shit vampire.
Funny duck, though.
Great duck.
Yeah.
Awful vampire.
Yes.
You know what? Angel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, purposefully. He didn't want to be a bad guy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
We did a bunch of games for the first part.
Yeah.
The second part, a bunch more games.
Ooh.
Games of the decade, either symbolic of a movement, but actually all of them ones that we just kind of thought were the best.
We didn't include any that were bad.
No.
Well, I disagree strongly with that.
Why do you say that, Tommy?
A couple more trends in this one. We'll fucking get started. Who wants to kick off with this first one that we've written down on this list here?
Eh? Well, I think Tommy's the biggest fan of it. So, The Elder Scrolls Part...
Five. Skyrim. Look, it's not my favorite game.
Right.
I don't think it's even that good, but I think it is one of the games of the decade.
Completely disagree.
Yeah.
I don't think it's one of the games of the decade, but I love it. No, it's... I'm a huge fan of this kind of game. The first-person aspect I can give or take, and you literally can be third-person if you want to, but massively open world... persistent RPG with a million quests and a million people to meet and a million mountains to climb over weirdly. I love that kind of game, and Skyrim, even to this point, is probably like the the ultimate, like the Uber example of it.
It's definitely, I think, the go-to
right.
for people because, like, they've made four Elder Scrolls games before this, which were
yeah.
similar things. Morrowind being like a big breakout one at the time, mm-hmm. a big kind of whoa, this is crazy. How far you can go? Holy shit, man!
Yeah,
that's how games were reviewed at the time.
That's how I reviewed it. I honestly, that's how I felt. I was like, holy shit! You can just like leave a city and just walk and walk and walk and walk, and you walk down a river, and there's a little mud crab, and he'll try and attack you. You give him a little hit with a stick.
Yeah, you go.
Yep.
And then he's dead.
Yeah.
The first four, don't know why they missed.
No.
I was pointing right at him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Oblivion, you know, same sort of thing, but a lot flashier.
Mm.
Very good looking at the time.
Yes.
And then for whatever reason, Skyrim comes out and just fucking blows up. It becomes yep. this huge game. Another one of those ones where a bizarre number of people got into it.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't have been really that interested in Morrowind, or weren't really that interested in Morrowind or Oblivion. Mm. But Skyrim just nails whatever magic sauce is needed for this type of game to really kick off in a general public kind of way.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, has become like a default for that type of game.
It's become a default game.
Sure.
Sort of like how we talked last episode about like Mario just being like, it's one of the games.
Yeah.
Skyrim now is just one of the games.
It kind of is. And it's weird because I think I fall in the camp of people who are like, yeah, but Morrowind was better. I don't get why Skyrim is the one. Yeah,
right.
But it broke out and I think it just had enough of a tactile thing to it and managed to do the combat better.
Mm-hmm.
And it had an interesting world.
Yeah.
And a well-made, a good sense of exploration and a well-implemented way of doing that. I don't know how to explain that. Do you know what I mean? It felt good to explore that world.
Yeah, yes.
And it was a big turning point for people being into that type of thing.
Yeah, sure. I think that it does the illusion of it being a real world where people are going about their lives, whether or not you're there, pretty well.
Yes.
It's certainly become more transparent, you know, as it's gotten older.
And you go into those towns, you're like, this is the biggest city here and there's 11 people who live here.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's fucking weird.
But up until that point, or up until a point, for a lot of people, even that scope hadn't been achieved or seen by them.
Yeah. People just got sucked into this one, and I did at the time as well. I liked it, but I don't know what it is that made this one click with people, and now still be such a heavily played game.
Yes,
people are still buying it for current systems. There's new versions of it being released, which is fucking insane.
Yes,
there's multiple versions that you can buy of it on like the PS4. You can buy the special edition thing. You can buy the VR edition.
Yeah,
and then. But it's years and years old, and it's really outdated in some ways as an open world game.
What year did it come out?
2011.
So there's an argument to be made that Skyrim is the game of the decade. It's
sure.
It's come out almost every year since then.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it is like that template that it is yet another one of when it came out, but for whatever reason has become the poster child for.
Yeah.
Has become a hugely popular type of game. The open world genre, if it is a genre, but that type of thing so enormously took over this decade.
Yes.
Like Far Cry 3, I think, is one that's not on this list, but maybe could be.
Sure.
That is like the shooter example of that. There's so many Assassin's Creeds, all of your Watch Dogs and stuff. They owe a lot to Grand Theft Auto, obviously.
Sure.
But I don't know why.
Fallout, obviously, is the other one. It's incredibly similar.
Which was Oblivion with guns.
Yep.
And then people called Skyrim Fallout with swords. But then Skyrim became just this default open world thing. And like, yeah, The Witcher and Breath of the Wild and all that sort of stuff are in a weird shadow that it's cast.
Yeah.
Cast. Spell.
Oh.
There you go. Eat it up.
Hugely influential.
I'll put it in a bowl for you. Get a spoon.
I'll steal a bowl off a shelf of a blacksmith.
Yeah, and then all the other bowls will jiggle around a little for some fucking reason.
Hugely influential, massive impact. I wish I had have played it at the time because to come to it fresh now, I don't think it stacks up as a new experience.
I agree.
When I played it in 20. 2017,
the Switch version, I guess.
Yeah.
So 17 maybe even.
I really wanted to play it because, yeah, it got released on that and, you know, people had always talked about it. It came out at a time where I wasn't really playing games originally. So I was like, great, cool. It's out on this console that I have. Awesome. I'll give it a go. Mm. And just couldn't. It felt very bad to play.
Mm.
It's,
sure.
It controls poorly. And you know, it's often when you, you know, if you come to the stuff that it has inspired and then you go back, it does feel like kind of, yeah, it feels like a step back.
Yeah. And it's weird. I wish I could offhand think of like a movie equivalent or whatever of this thing that was taking other works' guidance and was definitely a sequel to a thing that had been established.
Mm.
But since then has become a weirdly it viewed as like this originator of those ideas. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Can you actually not think of an example?
Of a movie?
Yeah.
Go.
Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I thought you were actually leading to that.
No.
Even the 1977
one. My brain is as dead as that fly right now.
Because the 77 Star Wars was an amalgamation of the films of Akira Kurosawa, all of those samurai films and westerns, and the sort of sci-fi boom that was sort of happening in the late 60s.
Like a Flash Gordon type of shit.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's Star Wars, and then it's also Star Wars now, and every Star Wars that's released.
100%. Star Wars is Skyrim. 100%. Yeah. Not actually that good, but right. There's some sort of charm that they put into it.
That makes it the most popular version of what it is in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That is a good comparison. I mean, Star Wars is pretty obscure, so it's not weird that I couldn't think of that example. But yeah, it is. Yeah, 100% that comparison completely works.
And it's annoyingly, Star Wars is another example if you're going to do a retrospective of the decade in pop culture where you just have to talk about it.
Right.
It's just annoyingly a dominating presence in culture.
And I kind of enjoyed it and I get why people love it, but right now I don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, Skyrim is Star Wars and the decade is not... A conversation about the decade is not complete without it, but that's probably all we need to say about it.
I agree. Sure.
Skyrim, hey, yeah, go on. Put that on the back of the box, you cowards, because I know you'll be putting out another box.
Yeah.
There'll be another one on the PS5. Do you reckon there's a PS5 version of Skyrim that comes out?
Oh, ooh. Fuck. I mean, surely they got to release their next game.
I mean, fucking Resident Evil 4 has been on every... Yeah, but fucking Elder Scrolls 6 won't be out for so long.
Yeah.
Because they got to do Star Whatever in between.
That would be a funny announcement in E3. Like, guess what, guys? Big announcement. There's no new Skyrims coming out on this next generation of consoles. That is our guarantee to you, the consumer.
Instead, Fallout 76 is second paid tier. Yeah, Skyrim is, for whatever reason, hugely influential, especially in pop culture, but not necessarily actually an influential game,
right.
If that makes sense.
Right. I'll sign off on that. I still love it, and I still play it now and like it. But
the one thing that I think is maybe its enduring legacy is just yelling at people. Mm. They're like, and then things falling away. That's funny.
That's good.
Yeah.
It turned into like a meme.
Yeah.
And all the mods and stuff that people make for it. And
there's
one of like a giant Thomas the Tank Engine flying through the air and attacking a village.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's probably a huge part of the reason Skyrim had such staying power for its early years, at least, was the modding capability.
Yeah.
Which is one of the elements that is not there in the current versions, really. Maybe it is in the PS4 or the Xbox One version, actually. There was something about that, maybe.
Yeah.
But I don't really know. I don't keep up with Skyrim. Open world games in general, though, biggest thing of the decade, probably.
Yeah.
Linear games, straightforward linear games.
Didn't they take a hit?
They took a bit of a backseat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not that many linear games being made where you just go day after day after day. Mm-hmm. It was more the day-to-day life of an explorer, but not a linear day-to-day life.
Not a literal day-to-day life where you're seeing the calendar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where you have to just live every single day. I mean, that would be tedious, surely.
Yeah.
How fucking long would that take as well to live every single day for a whole year?
It'd be tedious unless there was a really interesting and ambitious, strange story and world put around that experience.
Yeah, but you'd need to have such incredible visual design and audio to go along with it that there's no way that someone is going to be able to make a game that is a linear experience throughout a whole year with that kind of level of story that carries you through 100 plus hours of gameplay with a visual aesthetic and an audio soundtrack and even the little sound effects and the voice acting to keep that going. Lep is the... Persona 5.
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about.
Persona 5.
Tricked you all.
Now rewind and listen to what we said again. And that's what we think of Persona 5. Moving on.
Yeah, Persona 5, a game that we've, as we did with Breath of the Wild, a game we have talked about at length on the podcast before.
Persona 5, the Royal or whatever, coming out again soon, so maybe we'll talk about it again.
Yeah.
100 hours of podcasting about a 100-hour game.
Yes.
Persona 5 is so fucking good.
Yes.
This is maybe one of the games, other than Breath of the Wild, that we're all completely on the same page with over these two parts.
I think there's a couple more coming up.
Sure.
But yeah, one of the biggest ones for sure.
Yes.
It's amazing. It's just so fun.
It is.
For not really doing that much and the gameplay being like either a pretty straightforward combat system that is like, you know, engaging and, you know, moving around these kind of basic dungeons or just thumbing through menus. Mm-hmm. Somehow it's so fucking fun.
It just feels good. The combat is like basically, the standard JRPG menu system, Pokemon, whatever. We've seen it a million times.
Yeah.
But just the design, the visual design of your character carrying out those actions feels and looks great. Mm. I think it might be the only game whose soundtrack I regularly put on to listen to. Like that song, that battle song. I listen to quite regularly when I'm just sitting at home doing work. It's great. And I can't really... Even games that I love the soundtrack of, I love them in the context of the game and then sometimes I get tricked and go to put it on and go, I actually don't enjoy this in isolation.
Right.
I like it in the game. The songs in that game are just great in and of themselves.
The one that plays when you're about to like beat one of the palaces, the...
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Fucking cool-ass bass in that game.
Yes.
And the end of battle music.
All the voice acting in it, even just the little noises that it'll make as you're pressing the cursor to go to the next bit of text.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
Yeah.
It sounds really chunky and nice, and it makes you want to keep going. And then the story is really engaging.
That's it. It's like you almost want to say, like, oh, it's style. It is style that gets you through Persona 5. It is the design of everything that is usually quite boring, or if not boring, has been seen 70 times before in games.
Or just utilitarian. Just sure, like it's a menu. What are we going to do with this? But this fucking Persona does shit with it.
And then it's not just style. It's the substance is there as well. And that's why it's, I think, something that we all feel as passionately in favor of.
Yeah.
Completely. I just feel like the menus and everything, it's one of those things that when you notice the absence of that quality of design in games, it really sticks out. Like firing up a game and just even like the very first things you do, like the save file select or whatever, just feeling like, ugh. You know,
when something fucking pops up that like PS4 save menu, you're like, oh, grow up.
Yeah, yes.
Come on, put a little fucking starburst in there. Yes.
Right.
Have a weird wipe happen across the screen.
It's crazy. It goes such a long way. But I really don't think, I really think that this game, even though it does have incredible substance to it, the experience would be definitely hampered by it having a different interface.
All the weird little designs of all the enemies, all the interesting mini stories that happen over the arcs with like the palaces that you individually fight.
Yep.
And then the overall arc of the entire story.
Yeah.
Each and every one of the characters, The combat system, I said, is straightforward, but like it's also really fun. It's just like that, hey, this type beats that type of thing.
Also, you mentioned Pokemon before, Tommy. The personas.
Yeah.
Like the getting the personas, leveling them up, choosing them, changing them based on the enemies that you're fighting.
Yep.
That sort of pretty old-fashioned but very well done and well-balanced element versus element, you know, rock, paper, scissors, but it's like a whole bunch of different versions of it. It's really, really fun to explore and to perfect.
Yeah.
I think I'm still pretty early on in it, but I feel like I've played about 8 games.
Yeah,
like you,
right.
Even like you play for ages and then you get to the bit where you can go into the, is it in the subway system where you're driving around in the cat as a bus?
Oh, the Mementos.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. That happens.
Fresh goes better.
That happens pretty late in.
Right.
That's like nearly 10 hours in or something.
It's
that
a slow-ass burn game.
Yes.
I think I'm going to have to just start from the start when Royal comes out.
I keep thinking
about firing up my copy, but I've just left it so long and I feel like I would have to do a lot of fucking around to kind of get back to grips with it.
Yeah.
Royal, it just is like, seems as though it will be an upgraded, better version. Why play the other one type of thing?
Yeah. But like the anime,
which is daunting to come into.
Yeah, totally.
Done the 100 hours already.
But it's the anime stuff, because it's like, it has its own spin-off anime series and stuff.
Right.
But like the cutscenes are really fun and cool. The characters are all very unique and very interesting and strange.
Yeah.
The weird sort of parallel of what's happening in the real world and then what's happening underneath, and sort of using that as a psychological deconstruction of like how adulthood makes people become bad in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Is just, I've never seen anything like it before.
Even the day-to-day stuff of like fucking, you know, going to buy a plant or whatever from a shop.
Yeah.
And thinking it might be a nice present for your friend, yep, or going to bed or doing a quiz at school.
Making curry.
It's all fucking fun.
Yeah.
It took quite a while to be localized to the West, because I remember being in Japan and seeing it big screen advertising it in some electronic shops and not knowing anything really about the series, just being like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
Like really being into like the striking like red, black and white. Mm. Yeah, Seven Nation Army, great album. When they finally put that into English and brought it out in Australia, I was first in line.
Yeah, it's such a good game.
Yeah.
Play the Royal when it comes out. If you haven't played it yet, probably don't play the original one. Wait for the Royal,
play that one.
Yeah.
Speaking of royalty, video game royalty.
Okay.
I believe is a title maybe appropriate to be bestowed upon
what?
The next...
This cunt's the jester.
Still in the court. He's still in the court. The next prize, I think possibly because I wanted it.
Oh, no. We had to talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to do it to him.
What a decade this man has had, and we're putting all of his games together. It's the next game of the decade is following the career of Hideo Kojima.
Yeah, the great man.
The clown prince of video games.
Whatever doesn't kill my games only makes them stranger. he's such a... What a weird... So Peace Walker came out in 2010.
When you introduce me, show a little breast.
And if I move the controller, make those breasts jiggle. How long would that have taken to program? Yeah, fucking ages.
Yeah.
So, okay, maybe a problematic fave, Hideo Kojima.
Yep.
But the decade in Kojima went Peace Walker coming out on the PSP in 2010.
Right.
The technical Metal Gear Solid 5 furthered the story and was like pretty good in a weird different direction for Metal Gear.
Mm.
And then Metal Gear went in an even weirder and more different direction by going Ground Zeroes and Phantom Pain as like a combined Metal Gear Solid 5, which had a weird release thing where Ground Zeroes was like this kind of 5-hour demo thing.
Yeah. For prologue?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Yeah. Like a part zero.
That's right. Yeah.
And then Phantom Pain came out, hugely hyped game. Mm-hmm. Lots of, you know, years worth of build up for this thing. And then as it was coming out, this fallout between Kojima and Konami happened. Mm. And it became evident that he wasn't happy there. I can't remember if by the time it released, he was already gone. I think that's how it happened.
I think it was, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And
PT, when did PT come out?
PT. So yes, of course, that was in between as well. PT was like 2014.
Yeah, right.
And that was a playable teaser
that
came out during E3. And people didn't realize as it was coming out that it was a trailer, a demo for a new Silent Hill game.
Yeah.
Silent Hills with Norman Reedus. That was the big stinger at the end of PT, which was a genuinely really scary game.
Yeah, I wish that I played it. You can't get it anymore.
It's gone.
Yeah.
Which is also fucking fascinating and weird.
Yes. People, there's all these stories of people trying to save the game data and porting it from one PS4 to another and keeping it on external hard drives so they can't lose it.
I guess YouTube is the simplest way to experience that game now.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and the big stinger at the end of that was like, by the way, that first person game you're playing, you were Norman Reedus the whole time.
Yeah.
And people are like, no, I want to play as Norman Reedus. And then a monkey's paw curled over and Death Stranding became a glint in his eye. But yeah, Phantom Pain came out, fucked not good story, which was the thing that a lot of Metal Gear people, myself included, were there for.
Right.
A kind of a disappointment in that way, but a really great game and another sort of, I think, part of the evolution of that whole open world, reactive world genre during that decade.
But kind of unfinished, right?
Yeah, in some ways.
Yep.
The story ended on a like just weird kind of peter out.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of fizzled. In the same way that Kojima's, you know, partnership with Konami did. Because they moved off into putting all their resources into their pachinko shit and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But they like developed this engine. Phantom Pain came out in 2015 and had a PS3 version and a 360 version.
Yeah, right.
Because they had deliberately made this engine that could be on those old consoles, thinking they would go for longer and it wasn't necessary and all this shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like there was talk in Japan, especially, of new consoles not being wanted because of mobile gaming. So yeah, then Phantom Pain was this weird thing. The internet got real weird about it, thinking that there were two chapters in Phantom Pain, and then they thought there was going to be a third one drop at some point.
Right.
Never happened. Ridiculous thing, but I kind of bought into that a little bit for a little period of time. Never happened. And then, yeah, he moved off, started Kojima Productions, got in bed with Sony to make Death Stranding, which was one of my favorite games of last year and is such an interesting thing.
Mm.
And as are all of his games in some way, a real, you know, pusher forward of the form, you know, an innovator.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the last 10 years for Kojima have been fucking weird and not like anything else in video games.
Yeah.
And then them taking his baby and making that weird horde game.
Oh,
Metal Gear Survive.
Yeah.
Oh, brutal.
Which wasn't great.
Yeah.
It just a strange decade. But Phantom Pain, one of the best games of the decade probably in terms of just how it actually felt to play.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. Running around in that game, the things you could do with that open world were very fun.
Yeah.
Even if it was a disappointment from the perspective of it being a Metal Gear game.
What do you think he does next, or what would you like to see him do next, Adam, as a big fan?
I am a big fan, and say what you want about him, say what you want about me because of that. I'm a big fan of Kojima,
okay.
And I will be forever,
and
no matter what he...
You're opening the forum for anyone to say what they want about you and him. Okay, that's very brave. Honestly, though, most people love him.
Yeah.
Most people love his games. They're hugely popular. A lot of our listeners, most of our listeners, big fans.
Yeah. Well, because underrated for what he does or his team.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say he.
Yeah, yeah.
But what they do, again, with sort of menu shit, like Metal Gear and Death Stranding just have nice little noises when you open their dumb little menu things.
Yes.
All that sort of thing. There's a lot of care put into almost every aspect, which is what made parts of that story of Metal Gear Solid 5 stand out as being under what previous games had included.
Right.
Because there wasn't quite that same level of care apparently put into it. Next, I just want to see him try another new weird idea.
Yes.
New weird IP.
Keep going. And him having the freedom now to not be constrained with Metal Gear, to not be, you know, locked into making more of them.
Yep.
Because he didn't want to make more of them since the second one.
Right.
Really,
second one was about him not really wanting to make a sequel.
Right.
And then there were several others after that. So don't do a Death Stranding 2. Kojima, I know you're listening. Don't do a Death Stranding 2. Do something weird and new, some other sci-fi bullshit.
Well, surely he wouldn't want to, right? Like,
surely not, right? Yeah. But I think he also said in some interview there's more stuff he would do with it. I don't know. Make some fucking movie, because you clearly want to do that. Make it as...
Get it out of your system.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, I just go and have fun. Yeah. Do whatever. Yeah. All right, you're weird. He's like the black sheep of the family.
Yep.
Where you're just like, okay, he's going to do his thing and let him do it. It's easier if you just let him do it. But yeah, a fucking crazy decade. And I do think that Phantom Pain, for its faults, is still an incredible game. And Death Stranding is also a pretty incredible game. And just as a decade, I think it's worth giving the man a shout out.
Yeah. Yep.
So here it is. Kojima! what's next?
Okay. Well, I mean,
I was trying to work out how to segue into
look,
it.
Look, we've got a lot of things we want to talk about.
Sure. Speaking of talking.
Maybe to decide on what we talk about next, we should get parachuted, you know, airdropped onto a big island, all the three of us.
Just
three
of us?
Only one of us can decide what to talk
about. Yeah. I mean, maybe three of us, or maybe we get another 97 people.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Because there's a lot of perspectives out there. There's a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Drop us all on some big island, give us a weapon, and we just duke it out until there's one left.
Would that be fun? Turns out, yes.
Okay. The winner also gets a chicken dinner.
Oh, hell yeah. Now I'm in.
All right.
Yeah.
Player Unknown's Battlegrounds.
So, well, you should have found out the name of the player before you mentioned the name, but okay. Yeah. Like, one of the most significant games of the decade.
Yes.
Surely.
Yeah.
Not the inventor of this genre.
Right.
That was a movie.
Yes.
But, there were mods made for, I think, armor.
Is the movie Rat Race?
Yeah, yeah. 100 Mr. Beans get dropped onto an island.
And somehow Seth Green wins.
Was he the winner in that movie?
I don't remember who the winner was.
Sure.
I think he was in it. John Cleese?
John Cleese.
He gave the task, pretty sure. Anyway. Yeah, Player Unknown's Battlegrounds, PUBG.
Not the inventor, but the popularizer of the Battle Royale, 100 people versus each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which had a big spike in attempts to copy after that.
Mm.
One of them, incredibly successful.
Mm-hmm. I still don't know why that is the one that became so successful. Because PUBG was huge.
It was massive.
Yeah.
I loved it as well. When it came out, I was really, really into it because it was this brand new type of shooter, in my opinion, because, like, you know, you wouldn't think that having it go from 16 or 32 or whatever players up to 100 would make a difference, but it was the thing of having this landmass that you got to know and not having any idea. There was something about not being able to tell from like a little fucking thing on a map and not having a team where anybody was that turned it from being like just some dumb fast multiplayer shooter game into kind of a horror game.
Right.
It was so tense and so real feeling.
Right.
And even though it was, you know, obviously still a game, obviously. I never questioned that. And anyone who tells you that I did is wrong.
No, man. You're actually controlling, like, people in war zones in the Middle East. It's actually this fucking crazy conspiracy.
Dude, that's actually a sick idea for a bad movie.
For a bad short film.
That was Gamer, wasn't it? Michael C. Hall.
Yeah, and it was a Black Mirror episode as well, I think.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But it reinvigorated the idea of a multiplayer shooter that had been so long for that decade dominated by Call of Duty and so on, Battlefield.
You're spot on. It was like a small map. You know exactly where everyone's going to be, and it was just about the reflex and the just doing it enough times, respawning.
And even the Battlefield games with big maps and stuff like that was just a larger version of the same thing.
Yes.
It didn't have what PUBG did, which was this tension and this creativity that you could have with what you were doing, because not only were you trying to outshoot people, it became this meta game of trying to outthink them, where it's like they would come into this house and think I was here, so I go here, and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Did it really, really well.
Also, the stakes are high because it's like, well, you can only die once.
Yes, yeah. And then there's one winner out of the 100.
Yeah.
And if you're that fucking winner, it feels amazing.
Right.
Right.
That experience of being the winner of those games is one of the best that I've had playing games. Mm. It's so much fun. And then Fortnite fucked that and took all of that aspect out of it and made it into this sort of more fun, fast-paced, and then added the building element like Minecraft. But I guess those things are more popular.
Yeah.
And it became the big breakout example of this, and now is the default battle royale thing, and then Call of Duty put one in, and fucking Battlefield's putting one in, I think, and there's more that tried to sort of
Apex Legends
is huge. Yeah,
it's almost becoming bigger than like, it's just, I just don't understand why the second wave was the one that went truly insanely, like billions of players big.
Yeah, I guess because they brought back in that Call of Duty-ness to it.
Right. Fortnite obviously is aimed at kids as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, PUBG looks like a grown-ups game.
Sure.
It's a little less cute and fun.
And Fortnite's done some cool stuff. That thing of shutting everything down to go into season two or whatever.
Yeah,
to chapter two or whatever they called it. It's not that it's terrible. We just don't really know it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, not for us.
Yeah.
But a big fucking moment in the decade, PUBG, and also a great game.
Yeah.
And a big part of something that I guess is the next topic thing. We're going to kind of talk about two that we were going to have separate but realize they're together.
Yes.
And I think these also fit in with like Dota, which is a big missing thing from, and like League of Legends and esports.
Yes.
But online integration of online things into traditionally single player games and online elements into every aspect of games.
Yes. Yep.
Patches, fucking every part of it.
Yeah.
And watching games, Twitch,
yeah,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
That kind of all happened this decade.
Yes.
And that's what games are now.
That's I mean, like, we're doing a podcast about video games.
Yeah.
it's we're part of it as well.
But we're even an antiquated part of it.
Totally.
You know, like,
yeah,
kids don't listen to podcasts. If you're a kid and you listen to this podcast, grow up. I'm going to say that about everything.
And if you are our target demographic and our, you know, the bulk of our listeners, I hope work is going well for you today.
Yeah.
I hope the train ride's all right on the way home.
And if you're a kid, good on you. I'm kidding.
Yes.
And so are you. Everything you do is kidding. That's the verb of what you are.
Wow.
Kidding is hard.
That'd be funny, like a child doing a comedy show being like, kidding is what you said. Adulting.
No, it would be funny.
Yeah, like...
But something that we're all, the three of us, it's like a huge part of gaming now, and we're all, none of us particularly into it. I barely ever play stuff online.
Mm. Right.
I never watch Twitch streams. It just occupies this weird space where it's so big, but I kind of personally have no interest in engaging with it.
Yeah.
I certainly would. Yeah. I mean, games coming out that are 100% online and have to be online all the time. Mm.
Even single player games like Hitman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And games that you can pretty much do single player like Destiny and stuff like that, that would have been single player back in the day, now have all this stuff crammed in.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get the appeal of watching a Twitch stream. I don't get the appeal of watching a game instead of playing it.
You're an old man.
Yeah. Yeah.
I understand enjoying seeing people's reactions. Go and watch our Until Dawn playthrough. But like, it's entertainment. Backseat sort of gaming is a different way of doing it, but it is entertaining. I get it. I've watched parts of other playthroughs of parts of games that I know were a big impact to me.
Right.
Because it is interesting to see other people's reactions to it.
Right.
Right.
Esports, I'm with you. I don't get it.
that's the biggest one of all. That is just ridiculously lucrative.
Yeah.
It's insane.
There's millions of dollars in esports, but it's, I think it's because it's types of games that we don't really engage with anyway.
Yeah, good point.
So sure, that's sort of League of Legends or like StarCraft originally.
I was going to say competitive real-time strategy games. I loved RTS games. Probably the previous decade, that was one of my favorite forms of games. I loved them. I loved StarCraft and WarCraft. and I never played the Age games, but sort of all the ones sort of surrounding those.
Yeah.
They were my favorite games. And weirdly, growing up, my friends and I would play real-time strategy games at each other's houses, and we would watch each other play them.
Right.
And I loved it. And some of the time, it was like I was loving it because I didn't have that game at home.
Mm.
Some of the time is because I was interested in how they were playing, and I was excited to take my turn next and
right.
and do it as well. I don't know why that hasn't translated to the internet for me, because I also spend all of my time on the internet.
Right.
You like sport. You like regular
sport. Yeah, yeah.
But there's... I like fighting games. I don't watch fighting games.
Yeah.
I like Smash Brothers, but not in the way that they play it competitively.
Mm.
I don't know. Counter-Strike is fun.
Yeah.
I'm never going to watch someone play it.
Yeah.
I think it might just be partly a generational thing, but there are people who are our age and older who are into it.
Absolutely, there
There's
are.
Just some bone in our bodies that ain't there.
Mm. I think for me, it's like I think of playing a game, even though I spend a couple of hours a week talking about it with you guys.
Mm.
I don't really find it a social thing. It's something that I do. I've got nothing on at night.
Right.
I'm enjoying this game. I'm at home by myself. Feels good to just relax, turn the TV on, play a couple of hours of this game. And I certainly do then enjoy talking about it with a friend, but it's not something where I ever go... even the whole thing of like getting a crew together and having a big like Smash Brothers sesh.
Right.
It's like fun every now and then, but I would much rather just like cruise through something by myself. So I don't really think of it as like a social thing.
Mm.
But then I guess some people do. They like having, you know, they have the little community of people getting together and playing Fortnite and chatting over a headset or whatever. It's just not something that I've ever associated with gaming. I've always viewed it as a very solitary affair. It's completely switch off. Isolation mode for me.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I'm there as well.
Well, if and when I start Twitch streaming or creating videos or doing stuff like that, it won't be for the same reason that I play games. It'll be because it'll be for the same reasons that we do this, probably. Because I enjoy talking about games. I enjoy interacting with a bunch of people who are listening to us talk about games.
Yeah.
And the experience of playing a game while streaming it and chatting with people on Twitch will be completely different for me than the experience of just playing the game.
I think for us doing like the playthroughs of games that we've done as well, of A Way Out and Until Dawn, available on YouTube now, the nearest YouTube shop.
Yes.
I think we came at that from the comedy perspective too, where we like doing comedy and we're trying to be funny and not everyone thought we were. And hey, you know what? You're right. But that is the part that I like creating that stuff for.
Yeah, I agree.
And I like watching that sort of content with video game stuff too.
Right.
So
like a Dunkey.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Dunkey. I've watched all of his videos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Completely different genre of media to a regulation Let's Play or a Twitch stream or whatever.
That channel Girlfriend Reviews that I would have talked about like a month ago now.
Yeah.
Similar thing where it's like comedic videos. Mm. And then she's also coming to the perspective of it often of watching someone else play these games.
Right, right.
And I do get it. I just am not as into it.
Mm.
I think. But there's some stuff with Twitch especially that like that Twitch Plays Pokemon thing I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing to do, to have this big fucking...
like collaborative.
Right.
Yeah.
That then creates its own weird fake lore around all this stuff and has this bizarre life of its own beyond what that game is. Stuff like that is new and it's weird and it's different. And I think part of our aversion to it is that we're just not of that generation, possibly.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about it a bit deeply. I guess like the whole... the socializing element and what I was saying about finding it a very like something that I like doing in isolation is that the rest of my life is very social. My workplace is very social.
Right.
I spend a lot of time talking to other people, be it at a gig, which is a very social way of making a living.
Yeah.
Doing this is a very social way of making a living.
Yeah.
So I want that contrast. Not everyone has that experience.
Yeah.
Some people work in a cubicle, maybe they don't, or whatever their job is, they don't, you know, they don't socialize that often. They don't talk to other people much in their day to day. So that's where they're getting that outlet. They're chucking the headset on, they're getting in the lobby, they're blasting out a few N-bombs and then they're getting down to business.
I was going to bring that up as well, Tommy. You're 100% spot on. A person's social circle now can be purely based around a video game that they play on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's cool for them. Like maybe that is the way that they get into a community and socializing with people.
Yeah. If I didn't have the comedy stuff, then maybe I would have.
Yeah, I get to the end of the day and I'm just like wiped because I've been talking to people all day. Yeah, I want to just like absolutely veg and not really,
Talk
to Luigi while he's running around on the screen. Yeah. How you going there, little fella? Yeah.
What's up? Oh, green today, huh? Interesting choice. Mix things up, eh, Luigi? The other side of all the, like, aside from esports and watching people play games with the online integration is that, A, with stuff like Destiny and whatever now, you're kind of with people and online all the time socially, but also your game is online and the mechanics of how games work now they're all online.
Yeah.
Even if it's not an always online game, they all have patches now. Mm-hmm. They all have...
The day one 10 gig patch
for
an Australian is so annoying.
And it's virtually every game.
Yes.
Well, you turn the console on, maybe haven't played it for a couple of days, little notification comes up. Yeah. Oh, hey, this downloaded. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Hasn't even been on.
Or even worse, hey, we need to download this, please.
Yeah.
Not even please, it's fuck you. And it's crazy how
menus
much...
could stand to be a bit more polite now that you mention it.
But I
have an example of this, a kind of annoying one. I hadn't played my Xbox in a few days.
Yeah.
I had also had to like fix my internet. Some weird thing happened. Had to reset it, reset the password. Yeah. So the Xbox... no longer connected to the internet.
Right.
I turn it on to watch a movie because I know that it plays a certain file format.
Right.
Yep. So I turn it on. It's going like, oh, the internet's not connected. I'm like, whatever. I just got to watch a movie.
Yeah.
But I remember, oh, I'll change the password. I'll fix it up. I'll reconnect it, go to watch the movie. And then it starts downloading a system update that I can't stop.
Right.
And it takes like fucking 45 minutes.
Yeah.
It just ruins my evening.
And everyone's kind of accustomed to it now, but especially you bring up the Xbox. When the Xbox One was first coming out, it was being talked about.
With the Kinect, which is a huge part of why this was a problem.
Sure. A lot of people were really off the ideas that Microsoft were putting forward that are now pretty much the standard.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They were ahead of the curve and they were maybe saying it a little too blankly and trying to paint it as though it was a good thing.
Yeah.
But every company wanted to be at the place where digital games were first, that reselling of physical games didn't really happen.
Mm.
And Microsoft were just admitting it.
Yeah.
But now everyone's kind of got there, and like this online integration stuff is another way of, like we talked about in the last part with the season passes and shit, of prolonging the life of a game because, you know, you've always got to be online with it. You'll buy it digitally now way more often. The sales digitally. The reason they do those deep sales isn't so that, you know, you fucking get the game for cheaper. They're not doing it out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing it so you can't sell it.
Yeah.
Them making, you know, half price off of every game but to 10 people is better than them making full price to 10 people but then they sell it to 40 more people.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I might have done the math wrong. Costs for them as well.
Yeah.
I think also a weird cultural thing around that, the Xbox stuff.
Yeah.
People were paranoid about the Kinect being on all the time and connected to the internet all the time because it was surveillance. People were like, oh shit, people are going to be able to listen to me all the time. People are going to be able to watch me all the time. Whether it's accidental or whether it's some weird Microsoft thing, that was a huge paranoia around it.
Now everyone, it's,
And now like personal data and surveillance, it's just like, okay, yeah, we're in 1994 now and we accept that everything is constantly monitoring us all the time.
Your phones do it. Forget the Xbox.
Yeah. I'm still taping up the webcam from time to time. But
oh, yeah. You got to. Yeah. You got to do that.
I've never taped up a webcam.
Really?
Yeah, let it all hang out, man. If I want to cover the webcam...
You can't blackmail someone with no shame.
Exactly. If I want to cover up the webcam because I'm doing something, I'll put my balls gently over the webcam so that nobody can see what I'm up to. But yeah, the world is online now. It's always online.
Yes.
And it's at a precarious fucking seesaw where if that goes away, so much shit disappears.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So much shit breaks. Like online, always online games rely on a server that at some point will be shut down.
Yes.
There won't be a way to play fucking The Division or whatever at some point. A whole bunch of things have gone away because of that already and it'll only get worse. And I don't like that aspect of it at all.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Twitch comments are weird too, so that's the other part of it. The world's always online now. Remember a time when you could play through a single player game all on your own, but then the third one in the series made you be online for part of it? Mass Effect 2 and 3.
The part where you're sending death threats to the developers.
Yeah, it forced you to be online. Yeah. We're bravely, I believe, chucking Mass Effect 2 and 3 And, you know, kind of one's in there as well.
Yeah, when was one?
2007, but whatever.
Sure.
Mass Effect 2 and 3, Mass Effect 2 in particular.
But also 3.
But also 3 are some of the best games of the decade.
Absolutely. They're some of the best games of all time.
Agreed.
Two, four, it might have been the first, just because of my gaming habits and what I owned and didn't own, it might have been the first third-person cover shooter I ever played.
Right.
I didn't play Gears.
Sure.
I don't know what else would have been around at the time.
Kind of like Resident Evil 4, not really cover, but...
I never played Resident Evil 4.
But there were a lot of other sort of other action games around that time.
Was Uncharted 2... cover, had
yeah,
a cover system.
Yeah.
I would have played Mass Effect 2 before that.
Right.
So, yes, Mass Effect 2, the first game of that type that I ever played.
Yeah.
BioWare, a company that I loved.
Yep.
And it has the BioWare magic of a great story and a great cast of characters.
Yeah.
And a great sort of morality system choices you get to guide the story to an extent.
The people who were evidently behind a lot of that magic did leave partway through production of 3.
Right.
Which is some of the reason why 3 left it on a bit of a sour note. In retrospect, and I haven't played it for a long time, but I didn't mind it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to bet 3 holds up better now than the furor around it when it came out.
I mean, I loved it at the time. Right. I had literally no problems with the ending.
Sure.
I thought it was fine. I have sometimes, depending on my mood, I take the sort of perspective of like, that's what they chose to do. The people who made this game, made this series of games that are great, decided to present you with that choice at the end.
An odd thing about that though, is that they then chose to change that ending and then chose to add DLC that furthered it from the ending.
Yeah.
So it's a weird thing because this was all new at the time of like, fuck, the ending is updated.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, 3 is a really weird one. Two on its own is such a fucking good game.
Yeah, it's perfect. It's like mechanically the gameplay is incredibly fun.
Yeah.
Responsive, just nothing fucked about it at all. It's just really fluid and great cover shooter system.
Yeah.
The story is great, very engaging and enthralling.
Super like B-movie sci-fi action movie
thing.
That thing of going through with each of your squad mates, doing their little side quests.
The loyalty quests.
The loyalty quests.
Yeah.
And then having that factor into how the ending played out. And this cool, dumb suicide mission ending.
Yep.
Shepard gives some big asshole speech at this. Yeah. Like, you got to go forward an inch by a mile.
Yep.
And then you do this silly, but like silly in a fun way.
Yes.
Over the top sci-fi
like a James
shit.
Bond movie fucking, jumping over huge gaps and shit.
Yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
With a really well-crafted world.
Mm.
With all these aliens that felt like they had actual history.
Yeah, yes.
That galaxy felt like it had proper history to it.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, part of what it seemed like Andromeda did poorly.
Yeah.
Was throw that stuff away.
Yes.
And not replace it with much. But it was just a and then that thing of those games interacting with each other and your choices being the thing that kind of created the experience. It worked well.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I didn't play one.
Right.
Like at the time. I bought 2 for the PS3.
And then it let you make the one choices in like a 20-minute animated thing at the start, right?
Yeah, it did. Cool. Which was cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly playing it.
One is the weakest of the 3, so.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of game. It's not.
A little
the
bit.
The shooter stuff is not as tight.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a cover system. If there is, it's much weirder and worse.
It was just an older version. It wasn't quite as smooth. Two made the action a lot better.
But sure. I think probably the main thing about it that was really innovative was carrying over the choices and the save files from the first game to the second game and to the third game.
Yeah.
I don't know that had happened before.
No, I don't think so. I remember it being a big deal.
Yeah.
And then that third game had all the gameplay of two. Mm. It still had that great feel.
Yep.
It had that weird shit with the kid. That was the one thing I didn't really like about it. Dumb dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
With this stupid metaphor of a kid who you'd never seen before. And he's like, that kid died. But, and you're like, why does he give a shit? Who cares if it fucking... But, and then, yeah, there
the
was a
lot...
The
scale of three was huge as well. Like, yeah. What were we talking about recently? Oh, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Right.
Some of the best aspects of that were it presenting this giant scope, this huge scale, and you as this one little person overcoming that, you know, or at least interacting it and being really interesting and cool.
It made it feel like a galaxy was at war.
Yes.
Which was, and it delivered on that promise of this kind of understory of the, or overarching story or whatever, of the first two.
Yeah.
And it had that kind of apocalypse happen, which was interesting to see.
Yeah.
The ending was controversial, I think, because people didn't want it to end.
That is what I thought at the time. Yeah, absolutely.
And it is a very final ending.
Mm-hmm.
And it does boil down to a choice that you get to make at the end. So that promise of your influence, like, I think, if they'd have had one of the three endings happen based on your choices, it would have been a different response.
Right.
But the fact that you, it kind of comes out of nowhere, this character who's like, I've kind of been here all along, who cares?
Mm.
Make a choice. That was a little of a disappointing implementation of their idea.
Right. It's almost like the RPG finished before that scene.
Yes.
Which is how I viewed it. That is how I sort of took it in and rationalized it. Like,
right.
Yeah, this has been an RPG where I get to make choices and influence the story and develop relationships with people. And then the story has to end.
Yeah.
The fact that you get three choices is better than none.
Right. It just those choices being presented almost after the fact.
Yeah,
I think was a bit of a problem.
That's what other people said.
And
yes.
One of the primary writers, I forget his name, but he left during the production of that too. And the writing... I would have to play it again to remember, but the argument was that it suffered in quality because of that towards the back end.
Right.
Also, they had weird online integration stuff where you were meant to do the multiplayer to increase your like war rank or whatever it was called.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I remember that.
And there was a lot of EA hate around that time too.
Right.
Which also added to it. Maybe that was even the beginning-ish of the EA hate.
Mm.
EA and Activision got a lot of shit over this decade. EA in fucking particular.
Yeah.
Sometimes warranted, sometimes not that particularly warranted.
Sure, yeah.
And people were fucking mad about this.
EA were the most hated company in the world for like 3 or 4 years in a row.
Crazy.
Yeah.
The fact that this happening coincided with the rise of Twitter and online outrage and all that shit is no coincidence.
Yes, yeah.
So, but they were great games.
EA must thank their lucky stars that Bethesda came along and really started shooting some three-pointers.
Oh, yeah. But then they came back on the court and fucking did like Battlefront 2 and Mass Effect Andromeda kind of back-to-back.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Still kind of...
We'll see about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the stuff of outwardly yelling at a company, as much as that's what we do on this podcast sometimes.
Yeah.
It's done for fun.
Mm.
It's done in good spirit.
Sure.
I don't know if that's true. But yeah, I don't know. We've talked about that plenty. But
yep.
Mass Effect 2 and 3, this has made me want to replay them.
Yeah, same.
It's bizarre that there was never a remaster of those games
put
together.
Yeah, I'd like to play them. But yeah. Yeah,
well, there was for the PS3.
You could buy them as a pack,
you
I think.
You could get them as a pack on PS3.
Or maybe on the PC.
One, I think. Oh, they're on the PC. They've not been remastered or anything.
No.
They're on my Steam account.
Sure.
So I'm going to play them.
I'm
going to
fucking play them again too. I'm going to dig out the 360. Oh. I buried it. Speaking of remasters.
Okay.
Mass Effect never remastered. Mm. The next game, almost immediately remastered.
Yes.
The Last of Us.
baby.
What a game.
Oh, yeah.
I noticed you didn't pipe up much during Mass Effect because you hadn't played them.
No.
Did you play The Last of Us?
Yeah.
Get us going, Tommy.
Again, another one we've talked about heaps. So it came out right at the end of the PlayStation 3.
Yeah, it was like it was July of 2013, and then the PS4 was like November of 2013.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And then it came out very quickly.
There was a PS4 like remastered version the next year or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I played both of them.
Yeah, right.
I've never finished it, but I played through. Right.
The ending is amazing.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
Because it's just so subtle. Like the best parts of the story of that game, it's just got a touch of subtlety to it for a video game. I mean, it's fucking zombies getting shot in the head and shit, but it's about the relationship between the two protagonists.
When I was thinking about like my own personal choices for what this list should be, I was like, I guess an Uncharted should be on there, but then, you know, it was like for some representation of Naughty Dog and what they do, and then I quickly realized this, I think everyone would agree, is the pinnacle of what Naughty Dog can do.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with
that. Yes, definitely.
It got such a good relationship between the story and the gameplay. I was really impressed by that.
Yeah, yes.
There's tension to the gameplay that feeds into what's happening with the story of the game that made the whole thing just this really great experience that you get sucked into. The opening sequence of that game, where you're sort of playing as the daughter and then as Joel for a bit, is like, talk about fucking kicking a door open.
I think that The Last of Us might have the best start and the best end to any video game.
Yeah, it could do.
Yeah.
There are maybe bits in the middle where it's not as, like, you know, there's the whole thing with that cannibal guy and whatever, and it goes all over the place, and there's some combat or whatever. Not the point. I remember the game being a amazing experience from start to finish. I never played the DLC, which is crazy.
Me neither.
The Left Behind one.
Yeah.
Got to go back to it before the second one comes out.
Yeah.
But, one of the best stories in a game and the best, like, you know, it's not that complicated of a story. It's about trust between a father and a daughter figure, pretty much.
Yeah.
But what a fucking awesome thing to base a zombie game on.
Yeah,
I think it says a lot about it that we were talking last week about the, you know, all very, you know, zombies culturally so tapped out on. But then that doesn't factor in, you know, with this. There's no point where you're like, oh, no, great, I'm playing another zombie thing. It's like everything about it is so good and that just being a framework for this other story which is so interesting.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't really, it's just executed so well that you'd never have time to go, like, oh, yeah, great, here, fucking, yeah.
Absolutely did not believe it needed a sequel. And I'm so excited for the sequel.
Yeah. I'm definitely anticipating it. Mm. I don't know if I'm excited about it. I'm excited about
the prospect of what it could be. If they can pull this off again.
Yeah. I almost haven't thought about it enough to be like, oh, this is going to be great. Mm. It's going to be something, I think.
I agree with that. I think it will be something.
The Last of Us. I think, interesting for a zombie piece of zombie media to be genuinely just about the interpersonal story. Because most of the zombie things are like a metaphor for something else.
Right.
You know, like Night of the Living Dead was like about racism, and like Dawn of the Dead's about capitalism and consumerism. The Last of Us is, I think, genuinely just about human relationships.
Yeah.
Right.
Specifically like a stepfather and stepdaughter, essentially.
Yeah.
And it
like trust between two people.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And that's what Naughty Dog is so good at, where like Uncharted 4 as well, which I didn't like as much as this, but is, and I don't think pulls off the story thing as well because it's meant to be this more fun Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of about like that growing up.
Yes, yes.
Like Nathan Drake has to grow up at some point, and he can't keep doing this forever. And so there's that underlying theme in it that makes a good story. And all the best stories obviously have that thing to them, something that you can relate to really easily because it boils down to something where, yeah, I've never been in a zombie apocalypse, but I've had difficulty trusting people before.
Right. Mm.
And that, I'm not going to tell you the rest of my thought there because I don't know what you're going to do with it.
Oh, come on.
you've convinced me. I trust you now. But yeah, it's about like a raw, like you said, human emotion. Mm. And then it puts the gameplay to be in service of that feeling of tension and not knowing if you can make it through this and not knowing if you can rely on anyone.
Crafting and resource management as well.
Yeah.
The multiplayer was also fucking great.
I know. I don't think I ever...
No, I don't think
I played a bunch of it on the PS3 version and it was really fun.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The Last of Us. I think, weirdly, we did a whole Bandcamp episode about Naughty Dog. That's where we would have talked about
it. Covered the terrain a lot. At length. Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure we'll, in talking about the second one when that's out in, what, a couple of months?
May?
Yeah, right.
Oh, right. Okay, so it's the after that first big whack of...
Yeah. It's definitely not in that March fucked period.
Right. Yes.
And then Cyberpunk's April, and then Last of Us is May.
Good Lord.
God.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's great.
Well, if you want to talk about a game that is a relationship between a parent and child.
Oh.
Pac-Man Jr. Yeah, God of War.
God of War.
God of fucking War.
That fucking soundtrack is so good. Just that da, 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 and boy. Are some of the best individual sounds of the decade.
The sound of an axe smacking into something's head.
Weapon of the decade.
Yeah.
That fucking recallable boomerang axe.
So good.
Oh, it feels amazing.
The thing that I think about most when I think about God of War is just how seamless it all is. We talked about this when we reviewed it.
Fuck, that's right.
But there's no load screens.
Yeah.
Going between...
It's a one-take game.
It's a one-take game. Yeah. Area to area, everything, like the way it'll put you on a lift and it's clearly...
It is like OK Go made this video.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's clearly doing some rendering or whatever in the background, but it tricks you really neatly. And just like that effect of how immersive that makes it.
Mm.
And then when you go back to something where, you know, you go through a door and then you're looking at a loading screen for 10 minutes, you realize like... how jarring that is and how much that takes you out of something.
Yeah.
Like, it was so easy to just get pulled into this for hours at a time because you're never getting an opportunity to switch off and be like, oh, okay, I guess this is a good point to take a break and call it a day for this session.
And it helps that that one shot that the game is showing you is one of the most beautiful looking things that's ever been made by a computer.
Yes.
It looks fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I got a PS4 Pro recently. Mm. Did I talk about that on the podcast? It was cheap.
You might have mentioned it.
I think you did.
Yeah, traded in my old one and got a new one for like $100.
Right.
It's fucking cool. But I put God of War on first because it looks amazing.
Mm.
It is such a good looking game. The story is so well done.
Mm.
Yeah.
Again, over the top version of doing a thing about a father and a son or a parent and a child.
Yep.
Mm.
But like, again, really, it seems stupid to call this game subtle because you're literally like punching dragons and gods and shit.
Yeah.
But it's a really sweet, tender story.
I mean, talking about openings of games, the opening of this game is extremely tender.
Yeah.
It introduces you to this character who we knew already.
Yeah, and such a cool thing to do with that character, hey.
It's such a different perspective on him, but also one that is really justified.
100%. I love that it's a sequel and a reboot at the same time.
Yes.
It's so cool because, in 2010, I reckon it was, that's when God of War 3 came out.
Right.
And so in that decade, look at the two completely opposite ends of the spectrum things they did with that character.
Yeah.
In equally successful ways. I loved God of War 3.
Yeah.
And then to take him and to flip him around and say, hey, okay, some times pass, video games are different now. What can be done with them is different now.
Mm.
The story I probably want to tell, that Corey Barlog, I always want to say Balrog.
Yes. You're allowed to.
I'm going to do it. Nah, I don't think that shall fly you for whatever, fuck.
Lord that of the Rings. Shall not pass.
Yeah. But it wouldn't fly, you fools.
Yeah.
I tried to do both. I tried to have my cake and fucking sit on it too. I bet that'd feel good.
Sitting on a cake?
Yeah.
Oh, it depends what kind.
Imagine if you were naked and it just squished all over you.
Maybe one of those ice cream cakes we used to get from like Safeway.
You know, like old-fashioned people would fucking stamp a rubber thing onto the wax on the back of an envelope.
Yeah, the seal.
It'd be like that, but with your ass on a cake. What about that?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm into it.
Yeah. 2020, that's my new thing.
That insane, like crazy, over-the-top, like kind of boss fight that happens
early on?
Yeah, such a weird way to kick off a game.
Yeah.
Flying around, like because you're getting punched and you're flying over the top of
and
your own cabin.
And it goes for ages.
Yeah, it goes for so fucking long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then how that game wraps up all of those relationships and sets itself up for a sequel that I'm fucking looking forward to.
Yes.
Mm.
I think the turn in the middle of that game, and this is a pretty big spoiler if you've not played it, the bit where you go back to get your fucking chains is so good.
Honestly, it's epic.
It is. It is the correct usage of that word. Yeah. It is one of the best moments out of a game of the last decade.
Yeah. We mentioned briefly at the start of this discussion of God of War, the graphics, like the visuals.
Yeah.
It's not just graphically a high fidelity game.
Right.
It is well designed. It the environments are beautifully laid out. Mm. Like the atmosphere, the visuals combining with that great score.
Yeah.
It's all, the aesthetic of this game is great. Horizon Zero Dawn is a game that I briefly sort of brought up in, you know, choosing what to talk about.
Sure.
And people will say that that's the best looking game of the decade.
Mm.
And they maybe have, you know, there's some sort of justifications for that. But it's not as well designed as God of War.
No.
God of War has an art to its visuals that are also graphically amazing.
Mm. Yes, completely. And it's so, like, the Nordic setting is a great change from the Greek stuff.
Yes.
And it, again, it's so over the top, but it's in the little subtleties of it that it really makes that ridiculous stuff work and become real, because you've got these small moments where the camera will hang on Kratos and his kid just, like, sitting there in awkward silence.
Yeah.
And that is way more impactful than the big fucking bugs flying around and trying to kill you.
Mm. Yeah.
But that makes those ridiculous things seem so much more real visually and thematically and everything because it focuses on these little tiny bits.
Yeah.
And completely pulls them off with these performances that the guy from Stargate and the kid.
The kid's from something, right? Isn't he?
I don't know, but he's an actual kid.
Yeah. I think he's
that
from
was something that for some reason I was surprised to learn.
Really?
Yeah. But the bit where you go get those chains, I just want to say really quickly, it shows you how much it's moved on since 3.
Yes.
But then bringing back all the Zeus shit and having that factor in, like when the kid is like, wait, that was your dad? Oh, man, I love that game. I've got to fucking play that game again too.
Yeah, I want to play it again.
The open worldishness of it, kind of a little bit, kind of felt like Resident Evil 4 in that it had all these little secrets around that you could get to. But it wasn't like a proper open world, but they had fun little things to do. Fuck, what a good game.
Yeah, it was incredible.
What are you looking up, Ben?
I'm looking up that kid.
That's weird.
Oh, fuck. That's why I thought, he's the main kid from mid-90s.
Ah,
he's the lead
from
the movie mid-90s.
Love that movie.
The Jonah Hill one.
Yes.
He directed. Yes. Yeah, cool. God of War.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking awesome.
Good game.
Shows how far we came in that decade as well.
Mm.
Shows what progress video games made in terms of the maturity of the art form.
Yeah.
That it changed that much from the start to the end of the decade.
Yeah.
Another good example might be in comparing and contrasting two games that deserve to be on this list, Red Dead Redemption 1 and Red Dead Redemption 2.
Well, let me have a rule and a saw and a board and I'll cut it. I'll climb up a ladder with a hammer and a nail, and I'll nail it. Well, we worked so hard to build a little house together. In the snow or the rain or the ice cold wind, whenever. No matter what the weather, we're together.
Now I dispute that.
Interesting. Let's debate.
Is Red Dead Redemption 2 the zombies one? Well, man, what a trippy decade. Things really changed. Strange times, man.
I think that Red Dead Redemption 1 is just as mature as Red Dead Redemption 2.
When was the last time you played Red Dead Redemption 1?
When did it come out?
2010.
Yeah, about 2011.
Try going back to it.
Yeah, right.
Especially after 2.
Right.
Red Dead 1 is still good and still has a good story, but it is a lot sillier.
Right.
In some significant ways.
Right.
And it's also, like, it has those moments and it has those, you know, the songs that come in and the... But I think it's, if you pick those parts out in your memory, the bit of like, so John Marston's riding off and there's a song playing and you're going back to your homestead and then that plays out for a while before the ending and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It was great and it was impactful at the time. And you forget that, like, after the song plays when you ride into Mexico, straight after that you find some guy who's made Da Vinci's wingsuit and falls off a cliff and dies. He's like, "Mama!"
Right.
There's a bunch of silly Grand Theft Auto-y shit in there.
Yeah.
Right. Which there is in Red Dead 2 as well. That... But the main story of Red Dead 1 and 2, I think, are miles apart.
Right, okay. I remember people... It's personally, I cannot compare them properly because, yeah, I haven't played Red Dead 1 in a long time.
Yeah.
I remember people saying Red Dead 1 had a better story than 2.
I think Arthur Morgan's story in 2 is one of the best that's ever been in a video game.
That's certainly how I feel.
Yeah.
I do feel that way. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate a little bit just to be...
Right.
To make sure we're getting everything in the right context.
Well, and I'm just saying that 2 isn't so much better than 1 because 1 is bad.
Right.
2 is just an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite games now.
Yeah. I didn't really like the experience of playing it at times, weirdly.
I
agree.
That's
very hard to get on with. It took me a while to start enjoying it because I found the moving around to be very frustrating and very difficult to get a grip on.
Yeah.
To the point where it was just like, this literally is not fun.
I agreed at times, for sure. And in spite of that, it is worth it once you get into it and once you submit yourself to the, like, oh, I'm actually a cowboy.
That's
what it's trying to do here, right?
Yeah.
Rather than the Grand Theft Auto cowboy from Red Dead Redemption 1.
Mm. Right. Yeah, and once it picked up steam and you're moving camps and everything, it was a lot easier to kind of go along with that.
Mm.
So I told my girlfriend what happens at the end of that game. I kind of recounted the major strokes of the story and then explained the ending of the game in more detail.
Riveting evening for the both of you.
She fell asleep. And when she woke up, she looked at, genuinely, because we were talking about horses.
Oh, I'm sorry for making fun of you.
I don't think any of us saw that coming. We were watching Mr. Ed, and I was like,
this reminds me of a video game I played. Let me recount the story to you.
Look, we spend a lot of time together. It can't all be A-plus time.
Sure.
Sometimes you got to recount a game.
Yep.
But explaining the ending made her tear up.
It is
an emotional fucking ending.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
And also because she was like, I'm bored.
Please let me.
The bit with your horse where he leans down and just says, thank you, boar.
Yeah.
I had the one horse for the whole game.
Yeah.
And got me.
Yeah.
It's like the turn halfway of getting the fucking malaria or whatever.
Tuberculosis.
Whatever. Is such an interesting thing to do with the story of a game. This is a story of a game.
That wild turn where you go to Guam.
This
was one that really was me, doing some really late sessions on it.
Mm.
And that, I was like, okay, I'll just play for like another half hour. And then that all happens and you're kind of on rails and watching all this stuff. You don't have like a clear, all right, I'm going to turn it off here. Mm. And I ended up doing that entire section.
Jesus.
Just like in one sit, because I was just like, I want to see where this is going. Like, where the fuck is this going?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't pull myself away from it.
It maybe is the better looking game of the decade over God of War. I think those are two of the front runners for me.
Ooh.
I think it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'd have to play them both again. I just remember, I think maybe because God of War has some flashy visuals.
Sure.
So it's certainly very unique and arresting visuals that you literally have never seen in anything before. Red Dead, I think that's fair because it's like almost a real recreation of the old West.
And then the scale mixed with the detail.
Yeah.
Mm. Walking around that fucking New Orleans, whatever they called the fake version of it, was incredible for me.
Yeah.
And just how massive that world is.
Yep.
And how much stuff there actually is packed into it. There is quite a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Of shit in there. The main story was fantastic. Red Dead 1, for the time, same things to be said about it, probably.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just, I was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an incredible game still. I went back to it before, too. Not heaps, but I played maybe 4 or 5 hours of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And the controls are a bit stiffer now, and it obviously doesn't look as good as it did at the time, stuff like that. The story and the acting and that sort of stuff isn't as impactful now because it is of its time.
Right.
But I think for then, the same things could be said that we're saying about Red Dead 2 now, which are that it's a fucking amazing achievement. And yet, it's got issues.
Yeah.
It's got faults with its accessibility primarily.
Right.
But that ultimately isn't a fault to when if you gel with it. Same
sure,
as I think
sure.
about Death Stranding.
Yeah, right. I definitely remember for the time, and maybe I'm trying to do a little bit of time travel here, the story being really mature for a video game.
Yeah.
And like, okay, sure, the story is like a very classic Western story.
Yeah.
But it doesn't go silly. It doesn't go over the top. It doesn't pull any punches.
I
think the fact that it's essentially an unhappy ending
yeah.
was really something that I hadn't seen before in a video game at the time.
Absolutely. And I agree with that. The relationship that you have with Dutch in 1 isn't fleshed out at all.
Yeah, yeah.
2 being the prequel to 1 is such a good move.
Yes.
And I watched those ending cutscenes with Dutch on like YouTube or something after playing 2. And it does add a little context to them, which is nice.
Right, right.
But it's a lot more bare bones than I remembered.
Yeah, right.
But having that long stretch of just doing your fucking farming and stuff at the end of 1, which is kind of a move that they copied again for 2.
Yeah, they did.
Was cool.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool and an interesting way of telling that story at the time.
And then we've talked about it a lot, but 2 was my game of that year.
Yeah.
I loved the epilogues. I loved how long it was, how sprawling it was. Just, the different environments, the visuals. I dip back in pretty regularly just to have a bit of a ride around and collect a couple of bounties.
Something I just realized we forgot to fucking talk about at all because Astrobot was my game of last of 2018.
Oh, yeah.
VR happened in the 2010s.
Yes.
And Astrobot is the best VR game and it made me get it. That's all we need to say about it.
I think
is an understanding.
I think VR is going to peak in the coming decade.
Yeah. I reckon in 10 years we'll maybe be talking about VR more.
Yeah. I don't think it's significant enough splash in this decade.
Yeah.
Other than it just existing.
Huge technology deal. Maybe Half-Life Alyx will be the thing that
maybe.
Is
just
realized we forgot to talk about VR and Astrobot, I thought in some ways is better than Red Dead because it's more fun. But Red Dead Redemption 2 is a monumental achievement.
Yeah.
Another game on sort of par with The Last of Us in terms of a genuinely mature and emotional story in video games.
And told through the medium as well, like using the medium to tell it. Seeing Arthur get weaker as it goes on is pretty harrowing to watch.
Definitely. And having a few choices in there that you make yourself really helping you invest in the story. It's something that only a video game can do, really.
Yeah.
I would say best performance in a game of the decade to whoever it is that plays Arthur Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Just a fucking great character and a really good arc.
Yeah.
That was the thing that I struggled with the...
Because she's got a great arc!
God. Talking about great performances.
That was the thing I struggled with the epilogues was just I loved Arthur so much that I was just like, I don't want to play as this other guy.
It was nice to be John Marston again and it was, cool to... The ramp up at the end to when you have that other confrontation with Dutch towards the end is really cool. It kicks in that Red Dead 1 music while you're shooting up that mountain. That was fucking dope.
Yep.
But yeah, I agree. And I think that feeling of being like, Marston, after having 2 is kind of how I feel about 1 now.
But I never played 1, so I didn't have that attachment to it.
Right,
I wasn't
right.
like, oh, this is cool. I was just like, no, I want to be the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you're not allowed to because he's dead.
I want to just play as his corpse for a bit. I want to roll around in the mud.
Yep. Well, speaking of things dying, but then continuing on anyway, the 2010s are dead.
Yes.
Long live the 2020s.
Yeah, yeah, this podcast will continue.
Yeah.
So many games we probably haven't mentioned, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Nah, yeah. I reckon we said them all.
Well, guys, yeah, get on Facebook or let us know what your picks of the decade would be. Love to hear. Maybe we can do a, you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks we can check in and...
Or on Twitter, send an email or whatever. But yeah, we do have the we Patreon can that
read out join. Some significant enough ones that people feel like we missed out or should have covered.
Yep.
Thanks very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this two-parter wrap of the decade. Head to filthycasuals.com.au for all of the links to our Patreon and our Bandcamp episodes. We've got our YouTube Let's Play of Until Dawn happening now.
You even can though we fully admitted that we do not understand the appeal.
Hey, that's good. You know, good on us. We don't get it, but people like them, so we'll do them.
We're see-through. Yeah. I like our ones.
Get online, get on the website, watch all that stuff. Hop onto the Patreon. You can get a bonus episode every week of this show. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another new episode. Until then, take care. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
Picross 3D actual game of the decade. That's genuinely my belief.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.